Nick Ashew on the Fan. Got ourselves a nice little sample size of training camp now, huh? Got some guys coming back. Got some new faces. I'll take it. I'm at Nick Ashew on all the socials as well, if you wanna jump on there. So we've got Trey Amos back in practice for the Commanders. Dorrance Armstrong back. This guy named Stephon Diggs is now part of the team, too. What a week it's been for this Commanders team, right? This time last week, the conversation already was, oh, yeah, they really are going to have to do something to wide receiver, right? Then all of a sudden, everything changes, and so does the perception. We'll talk to Scott Abraham at 1:30. Anthony Armstrong going to join us in a couple of hours. We'll hear from him as well. Look, this was needed, and now we can actually move forward with a team that has certainly higher expectations and a more balanced-looking offense. I mean, really, Stephon Diggs was... It was a no-brainer. Like, honestly, it really was. And I understand that there were some things off the field that had to get addressed, and there was some other stuff going on. And say what you want about those situations. The reality is, if it is not part of the equation with him, then it's not part of the equation. And if it's about, right now, him playing football for this team, that's it. Like, that's, you know, that's all we can go by. But what I will say is, there has been a change in the perception of the Commanders' offense on a national scale. I was talking about this morning. My Westwood One show, actually, is like, and I know social media is a dangerous gauge, right? Because we can sit there and be like, well, I saw this on so. Okay, well, we know it's not all real, but there was this kind of shift in the tides with the Commanders and the perception around their offense where the constant narrative was, well, they need another receiver. Brandon Ayuk, maybe Stephon Diggs. Oh, never mind. Ayuk just insulted Jaden Daniels and his mom. That's probably not going to happen. Well, maybe it's going to be Stephon Diggs. Oh, you know, they really could use some help, man. That offense, I don't know, and there's questions. And all of a sudden now, everything I've seen, again, I know it's social media, but like this is still the public perception that can be out there. Look at all these weapons the Commanders have. Jaden Daniels has all this to work with now. And this is just... after signing Stephon Diggs, right? Terry McLaurin, Stephon Diggs, Chigakonkwo at tight end. Oh, man, Rashad White out of the backfield. Antonio Williams, too. But what it actually did was it kind of slotted everybody down a spot, at least now in theory, not just in the depth chart, but just in what the perception is of what their role is going to be, to where you don't feel like you're stretching guys out with a little too much too soon, right? Antonio Williams now can be looked at as the number three receiver, a slot receiver, a guy that can go be a deep threat for you, a guy that can make plays, you know, get creative, some trick plays, all of those things. Terry McLaurin can actually be the guy that maybe does get 10 targets a game, when at the same time, Stephon Diggs is over there on the other side of the field, and he can do what he's done, even if he's not the same guy. He's now added, it's the spotlight now gets brighter on that position of number two receiver. And again, like, we use it very broadly when we say number two receiver, but you know what I mean, right? Like, he is now essentially going to be looked at as like the second option there. But then you've got Chigakonkwo, who now is, instead of the de facto number two, he's actually the number one tight end that you can use in ways. Like, it just has this trickle-down effect. And I think that's the most important thing now about where this team sits, where for the Commanders, it's no longer a question about, you know, who the number two receiver is. Because in reality, this is the best receiving duo that this team has had in over a decade, since maybe Pierre Garçon and DeSean Jackson. I mean, really. If you really look at, and again, I know that it's been slim pickings. I know it hasn't been great, so it's not like there's a ton of competition for that. And I know this isn't CeeDee Lamb and George Pickens. Slim pickings, didn't even mean to do that. You're welcome. You know, or, I mean, whatever. T. Higgins. God, we were rhyming. What is going on here? We don't need this. Or Ja'Marr Chase. But it is still at least a 1-2 punch for the Commanders at wide receiver that is, it's going to be at least respected by a defense, right? Even if you think Terry McLaurin's lost a step, even if you think Stephon Diggs has lost a step, whatever, it's still better than the position they were in before, which then in turn gives you other opportunities for other guys. Now, if you want to start talking about what this roster is going to look like, and we got a long time and it's a numbers game, but you know, the question really becomes, like, how many receivers are they going to keep? Like, that is a real question for this team now, when before it was, somebody might make this roster like a Jaden Bradley that's been getting some opportunities early in camp, and he's a big body, and, you know, they just... Now, he's probably practice squad. Chris Hilton just got released. But you're talking Terry McLaurin, Stephon Diggs, Antonio Williams. Luke McCaffrey. We're at 4 now. Remember, Luke McCaffrey, also special teams. Jalen Lane, likely 5, if they keep both because of their special teams ability, which I'd like to have more than one good returner on this team, right? So we're already at 5 now. So let's just say the Commanders keep 7 wide receivers. Now we've come down to, for 2 spots, 3 receivers. Treylon Burks, De'Ami Brown, Van Jefferson. Somebody's the odd man out there. In the most likely scenario out of those guys, again, you have to have some value on special teams. Does that mean that De'Ami Brown or Van Jefferson are out? Both kind of similar deep threats, right? You've got that with a Stephon Diggs that's added Antonio Williams. Do you think one of them are probably gone? Treylon Burks is a big body, so that probably helps him make this roster. And there's still that hope of like, hey, you can get the most out of him. He's in his mid-20s. There's still this chance where you could do it. Okay. Somebody's going to be the odd man out when for a while it kind of felt like you had your receiver room set if they were going to keep 6 or 7 and everybody was already on the roster. Now it's not the case anymore. So it kind of slots everybody down in a position where they should feel a lot more comfortable. And look, I'm not saying that Stephon Diggs is going to be peak Stephon Diggs, but we also don't know that much about what this offense is going to look like. Now we've had some samples in camp from what we can see. Some trick plays are going to be there, creativity. Look, when you're a 30-year-old offensive coordinator that's really been kind of prepping for this role, like David Blau has, you got some tricks up your sleeve. And he's learned from really smart offensive minds, including a Ben Johnson, who has shown, like, at least isn't... I know the... Look, the Bears won 11 games the first year. We don't know for sure whether Ben Johnson is a great head coach. We think he might be, but we don't know for sure. But what we do know is he's a great offensive coordinator. He's a great offensive mind. And David Blau has spent time learning from him, working with him as a quarterback there in Detroit. Like... So there is the opportunity here for the potential for Stephon Diggs to actually be better this year, right? At least a 1,000-yard receiver. And listen, with New England last year, they didn't have a lot of receiver either. It also benefits Stephon Diggs to be in Washington, right? I know now the Patriots went out and got a couple of receivers. Romeo Doubs, A.J. Brown, so they've gotten that. But last year it was kind of Stephon Diggs, and he was supposed to be the number one, and then... You know, the question was like, who else after that? And the pecking order, kind of the same questions the Commanders had before this, right? But now you've got Terry McLaurin on one side, Stephon Diggs on the other, Antonio Williams, you know, out of the slot and doing some different things, and they'll move these guys around. So it doesn't just benefit Terry McLaurin. It doesn't just benefit Antonio Williams. It also benefits Stephon Diggs to get an opportunity in an offense where he's going to get fed the ball. They're going to get creative, by all accounts, from what we know and how this offense is likely going to go. There's going to be opportunity there, and there's going to be opportunity for a lot. Look, there's no excuses now for this Commanders offense. Defense is a separate story. I know they went out and made a lot of additions. They did a lot of things, but from an offensive side of the football, if Jaden Daniels stays healthy, this team should be a top 10 offense, bare minimum. They should. Now, it doesn't mean that they have, like, the best 1-2 punch at wide receiver, but what it means is they have enough balance where they can really spread the ball around and make them more dangerous, get creative, different looks that you're going to give a defense. All of these things, that matters. Because now you've got Terry McLaurin and Stephon Diggs. Again, Antonio Williams, but then you start going to Chigakonkwo, who's never really had a real opportunity. I'm big on him, man. I think he's going to have a great year with this team. And, I mean, he talked about it at his introductory press conference. He's like, I'm going to run a real route tree for a change, which was clearly just... throwing shade at the Titans, but that was, he made a point. Again, maybe there's a trickle-down effect where Ben Sinnott gets some opportunities, and he's not expected to be the number one tight end, but he's your second-best pass-catching tight end and makes the roster that way. That's a better role for him at this point. Not to mention what you got going on in the backfield. Ja'Cory Kroski, Merritt, Rashad White, both can be receivers. Bill's going to get more of the carries. You got Katron Allen as maybe your third-down back, big body, fat man. Come on. I mean, anybody's named Fat Man, you got to have him on your roster, right? You got to have that guy for short yardage situations. They've got a lot. It's not always necessarily about having like the best wide receiver, right? Or the best tight end. It's about having a level of talent that spreads out farther, right? What was one of the biggest issues this team had last year? Depth. They lacked depth, among other things. But, you know, it got exposed really fast. Because all of a sudden, the minute the injury started kicking in, it was like, oh, they got nobody. But now, you've allowed yourself all kinds of opportunities to really get more creative offensively. And it doesn't have to be. Like, yeah, they're going to say Terry McLaurin 10 targets. And that's also the right thing that you say when you're first starting off as the offensive coordinator. But you think that's going to happen every single week? It's not. Defenses, no. that Terry McLaurin's going to be a guy that Jaden Daniels is going to want to throw the ball to. And if he faces a bunch of double teams, you got a lot of other guys that you can get the ball to. I mean, for a while, the theory anyway that I had was going to be you're going to see sort of a Packers-style offense, right? Where it was every week, you didn't know who was getting the targets. Was it Romeo Doubs? Was it Christian Watson? Was it, you know, Dontavian Wicks? Whatever, go down the list. You didn't know every single week. And if you had any one of them in fantasy, or you're betting any props, you tended to be in big trouble because you never knew. It was unpredictable. And you can still be unpredictable with this offense because 1 week, maybe it is Stephon Diggs in a great matchup. Maybe it's a team that's got a great number one corner, but you don't have a great number two. And then their slot corner is just a complete mess. And Antonio Williams and Stephon Diggs are more out of the slot. Or you start moving Terry McLaurin out of the slot a little bit. Rotate him around a little bit. Like, there's just so much versatility now that this team can have just given with what they were able to do. And again, like one player, one addition like that doesn't completely change your roster, especially somebody that was on the market for a while. But Stephon Diggs still has some juice left. He led the NFL in catch rate last year. I mean, like, there's still plenty there. It's like when people talk about Aaron Rodgers, it's like Aaron Rodgers is washed. Is he? Because there's probably 10 or 11 teams in the NFL that would take Jaden Daniels, but there's probably 10 or 11 teams that would take Aaron Rodgers over the current quarterback that they have right now. Also, Aaron Rodgers, even then last year, career high in completion percentage. So, like, guys can still produce. It just may look a little bit different as you go farther down in your career. My bigger concern with the offense now is just looking at what the hell's going on at center. Now, they signed another center, right? You got Trey Hill, who they brought in. You got a rookie six-round pick that's competing for a spot. Julian Good-Jones, Matt Golden already there. And then, I don't know, Nick Allegretti may be healthy. Maybe he's the center. I mean, you'd hope they went into this without having a complete, you know, clueless effort about what the center position was going to look like since they struck out in free agency. But I doubt that this was their plan A, right? Plan A was going out in free agency. And they got priced out of the market. And, you know, we complain when they don't spend money. We complain when they do spend money. And I get it. We're all scarred. I saw something today. And it was like the Commanders' Madden ratings for their 2001 roster. Remember that? Mark Carrier, Dion, Bruce Smith. I know it gives you chills, right? Thinking that was going to work, and it turned out to be a complete nightmare. But again, they went out and spent a ton of money. Dan Snyder treated this team like it was a fantasy football team, and it didn't work out. So, like, you can be overloaded with what you think is top-end talent on your roster, and it doesn't mean anything. Hell, think about the Eagles. Remember the Vince Young Eagles? Michael Vick was the starter, but remember when Vince Young was the backup, and he was like, oh yeah, this is a dream team. Nnamdi Asamoah was there. That team went 8-8. They were terrible. So you can throw all the talent you want on a roster, or top-end talent. But sometimes it's more about guys that actually fit specific roles. And also, from a coaching staff perspective, you got to be able to cultivate that talent, put him in position to succeed. It's the same thing with younger guys, like all of that. That's where the coaching comes in. And really, that's where a lot of the pressure is this year now. I mean, yeah, you've got a rookie offensive and defensive coordinator, which really puts the pressure squarely on Dan Quinn. I mean, that's what we're talking about, right? Like, let's be honest with ourselves. You at least have, I don't want to use the word excuse. It's not the right word. But let's just think of a word that's similar to excuse. Reason. We'll go with, you have at least a reason that it may not be perfect year one with an offensive and defensive system that was created by a rookie offensive or defensive coordinator, right? Like, you can at least say, oh, well, that's year one. There's still a little bit, maybe some growing pains. And, hell, David Blau is really young. Like, there's, you know, there's going to be a little chance. Dan Quinn doesn't have that excuse. This is year three. This is a guy that's already been a head coach. This is a guy that has had success as a head coach, and then everybody likes to talk about 28-3 in the Super Bowl, and some of that's his fault, but there's a lot of factors that go in on that. But, you know, is this going to be the point where Dan Quinn has built the culture up and kind of taken it to a certain level, and maybe he's the only guy that can get him to a certain point? I always use the Mark Jackson example with the Warriors, right? Mark Jackson got the Warriors to a respectable franchise, middle of the pack Western Conference team, 47 wins his last year, gets fired, 2015, Steve Kerr comes in, they win a million championships. There's sometimes a coach that gets you to a certain level, building the foundation, and then you've got another coach that builds off of that. They just have a different philosophy, more things are in place, timing, whatever the case is. But that's a lot of pressure on Dan Quinn this year. It really does fall on him in a lot of ways. I'm still disappointed, though. I have not seen anything, not one thing yet, from Brandon Ayuk. Metal Chris, have we seen anything? I've seen nothing, right?
I haven't yet. I've been keeping an eye on it, too.
Do you have alerts set to his accounts?
No, I'm not that bad. But I've been really curious because, like, This kind of killed his whole shtick about coming to D.C., so I'm really curious what he wants to say next.
And we don't even know for sure whether he really bought that house. We assume he bought that house.
So I heard some inside baseball from Rooster. It sounds like, yeah, it's official. He's living out in Loudoun. So.
All right. Well, that's great. He can hang out there. He's still a 49er until otherwise
determined. Yeah, I mean, who knows how long he's going to be staying there. But
right, right. Well, listen, the good thing is he can hang on to the house, sell it later. It's a great real estate market out there in Loudoun County, so he'll be fine. It's a good investment. Might need it. The money he might still owe the 49ers. But, I mean, yeah, he's been completely silent. And this is like his chance. Maybe he's just sitting and planning, like, exactly what the response is going to be. Do you imagine if he just goes all in on Jaden Daniels again and he's just burned the one bridge. And I can't imagine there's going to be
that was the thing I kind of think just ended it for him. When he started talking crap about Jaden Daniels, I was like,
that was
yeah,
it.
Man, like, people were waiting to see what you were going to do, and then all of a sudden you start going after, like, the one guy that's probably going to be on your side. Like,
he bit the hand that could have fed him. That's really what it was.
Yeah, it's just a really stupid move, but it's a series of dumb moves on his part on social media.
You're right. It was a dumb move and a series of dumb moves.
I mean, we're literally in a point now where we're like, man, we got Stephon Diggs, and that is a way better locker situation than that other guy would have been. Like, he put himself in a position where everyone was like that. So he, I just
100% ruined any of his chances. I don't think he plays in the NFL again at this point.
I don't know. I could see someone getting injured midseason and wanting him, but I mean, always, you know, somebody thinks they got a contender, shot at the playoffs, and their receiver goes down, and you know.
I don't know, man.
That's how people get signed that shouldn't
come
back sometimes.
I know,
but
he'd have to, if he goes dark for a while, maybe it gets washed out of the news cycle, and then you can.
Yeah, I don't think he's coming to San Fran or Commanders, though. I think those two are just permanently off the table at this point. So
my dream of Commanders 49ers Monday Night Football revenge game for Brandon Ayuk is dead, and that makes me sad, but we can't always get everything we want, and I'd rather have Stephon Diggs at this point anyway. So, all right, concerns on the defensive side of the football next. Nick Ashew on The Fan. The Commanders spent a ton of money this offseason, and a lot of it was on defense, and a lot of it was on guys that filled needs that they desperately had. Nick Ashew on The Fan. So as of yesterday, Trey Amos back, practicing in full with the Commanders. Dorrance Armstrong activated off the PUP list. Those are two key pieces to this defense this year. And it's not just about the money that they spent, though it is. It's also about getting the most out of the guys you've already got on this roster. Now, it's not going to happen for everybody, right? But Dorrance Armstrong was, I mean, he was their best pass rusher before he got hurt last year. Led the team in sacks like a month after he actually was hurt and done for the year. Trey Amos is young and injury prone, so at least so far in his career. But it's a small sample size, so he can turn that around. But there's a lot of expectations on him this year to show that. Mikey Sambrisso, we know that this is somebody else, another second-round pick that you hope is going to be a legit corner for you. I know they signed Fabian Moreau. That's a blast from the past, right? But, you know, they started to go out and get some other secondary guys, and that's great. Rasul Douglas looks like he's going to have a real impact probably on this team. But, you know, guys like Frankie Louvu, who's sometimes the green dot, linebacker when he's out there, which, God, we talk a lot about the green dot, don't we? It's not just about the new guys on this roster. It's also names that we've either used in a sentence of needs to do more or hasn't shown us enough or questions or whatever the conversation is, and the expectations of them being more. Johnny Newton, that's a second-round pick from a couple years ago. The Commanders had three second-round picks in the 2024 draft. Every single one of them right now, we question whether they can contribute to this team. That's a problem. Mikey Samrasil, Johnny Newman, Ben Sinnott, or Newton. I said Newman. Newman. Johnny Newman. Newman. That's Seinfeld on the brain, I guess. I don't know why, but I guess so. But, you know, like, this is what coaching is supposed to do. And maybe with a new defensive system, you hope that you're going to get the most out of these guys, or by adding some talent similar to the Stephon Diggs effect, where even if Stephon Diggs isn't like peak Stephon Diggs this year, there's still going to be attention by defenses on him, which then frees up other guys like Antonio Williams and everybody else. And it's a similar situation here too, where, you know, Dafe Owe, you're adding a pass rusher. Does that take at least a little bit of the attention away from a Dorrance Armstrong to free him up? Does that allow for sneaky opportunities with Frankie Louvu to get after the quarterback a little bit more and be the Frankie Louvu that we saw 2 years ago? Hell, maybe even Daron Payne. Maybe Daron Payne won't be a pinata for everybody anymore. They've gone out and they've added a lot of pieces. And not every one of them is going to hit. Adafe Owe needs to. Leo Chenal needs to. Sonny Styles needs to. I'd argue probably Nick Cross is in that conversation as well. Then there's other guys that fill certain roles. Charles Amenahu, Tim Settle. Good additions, but not necessarily going to be the guys that you expect to be like the main focal point of the defense. But rotation guys are guys that can still contribute, whatever the case is. But, you know, they had to go make these additions. But it doesn't mean that there was a complete lack of talent on this defense. I mean, there mostly was. But there are guys that you would hope, in theory, come back and in a new system, it's a fresh start. There's a, you know, the ability to sit back and see what didn't work with what's on film from Joe Witt Jr. when he was there. And Durante Jones can say, all right, I know how I'm going to get the most out of Frankie Louvu or a Johnny Newton. Dorrance Armstrong back and healthy helps. Daron Payne, maximize him for what might be his last year with this team. Whatever, right? That's what this team really needs, is a level of consistency. And look, I get it, right? Like, Sonny Styles is getting all the comparisons here now. Sonny Styles is already getting called Ray Lewis on social media. Again, social media, I get it, but that's the narrative around him already. Now, don't get me wrong. That slow motion video of him at camp, I'm sure you saw it, right, Metal Chris? Where he's dripping sweat and there's blood on his jersey and it's slow motion and it's cinematic. Woo-hoo-hoo. Tell me he didn't look like a badass. He looked like a badass there.
Yeah, pretty sick.
So, like, you can't fault people for watching that going, oh, man. Because then you see plays where, you know, stuffing Bill in the backfield and getting after guys. Like, I see it. I definitely see the excitement and obviously why they drafted him. This is the guy I was begging to fall to number 7 for them. But there is still going to be a little bit of a learning curve. Like, he's still a rookie. And he's going to make mistakes. And he's essentially asked to be the Bobby Wagner of this defense. And I know, Bobby Wagner, terrible in coverage. I know. Still their best defensive player last year. So that tells you what type of defense they had last season. Sonny Styles is going to have to step in and be one of the leaders of this defense. Maybe not the main one at first, right? But your hope is that this team has their quarterback of the future and their quarterback of the defense of the future, right? In Sonny Styles. And he's got some veterans that he can certainly learn from. I'd love Bobby Wagner to still be on the roster, but you can't take up a roster spot, you know, with some of the other log jams they're going to have. If he could just come back and be like a defensive assistant, really train Sonny Styles, spend more time with Jaden still like he's been doing. There's a lot of value in that. It's just tough when he's really limited as, you know, a guy that can't be out in obvious passing situations and can get exploited in coverage constantly. It's just tough. But Bobby Wagner brought a lot to this team, and leadership matters, right? If we're talking so much about culture, culture is it's a really big deal. And you got to have guys that fit into that culture, and they've got that with a Sonny Styles. That's why they drafted him, and that's why they have all these conversations. It's beyond just what you can do on the field. These actual conversations with players are for a reason. It's to get to know them as a competitor, as a leader, as a person, whatever. All that's really, really important, and that's the hope, is that they, and listen, maybe even somebody like Joshua Josephs, that's a fifth-round pick, but doesn't mean that a guy that can get off the edge drafted in the fifth round can't be really good. We've seen it time and time again. Like, that's the great thing. That's what I love about the NFL draft over the NBA draft. It's like, you can draft guys late in the NFL draft, and it's just, oh, wow, how did everybody miss on this? It happens all the time. It's harder in the NBA. I get it. It's a different sport, far more positions. So there's just, you're flooded with talent all across the board. In the NBA, you got, you know, basketball, you got 5 guys on the floor. It's essentially, if we're excluding special teams, you got 22 different positions, give or take, that you're evaluating in the NFL draft. It's a lot easier for guys to slip through the cracks. It's just how it works. But, you know, maybe this team will finally show, and this front office will finally show, hey, we can draft. You start to see the player development side of things start to kick in. Because you can draft whoever you want. If they don't develop into great players, it really doesn't matter. Same thing in free agency. You can spend all the money in free agency you want, but if dudes aren't fitting in your system, who cares? Like, the Rams play F them picks every single year, and they did it again this offseason, but they went after, I mean, Myles Garrett. Kind of know what he's going to do, okay? And now, once Aaron Donald comes back, you're just going to add another piece to that. You know what he can do, too. They love F them picks. Hear from PJ Glasser next. Nick Ashew on the Fan. Nick Ashew on the Fan. It's nice, man. The Commanders have been looking for a number 2 receiver opposite of Terry McLaurin for really since 2019, right? It's kind of like that team in Baltimore that's been, you know, taking forever and finally locked down a receiver they drafted for a change. PJ Glasser, Westwood One Sports, Game Day Garage, jumps on with me. I want to start with the NFL, though, with you, because I can't bring you on and not get your take on Stephon Diggs signing with the Commanders, PJ, because, you know, it has been a long, long, arduous, drawn-out process of whether it was going to be Brandon Ayuk or Stephon Diggs or nobody or whatever the case is. And now that it's done, where do you see this Commanders wide receiver group in terms of the talent and its potential, given that just adding Stephon Diggs alone, man, I saw a lot of like, oh my God, this Commanders offense is completely loaded at this point.
Yeah, Nick, appreciate you having me on. It's huge because, you know, they were going to go into the season with like Antonio Williams being their number two or Luke McCaffrey, right? Like, Terry's the clear number one, as we know. But they were really asking a lot of somebody else to step up and kind of emerge as that number two receiver. Now that you have the Stephon Diggs signing and you have somebody that's been in the league, he's been successful for a long time, even though he's not the player that he was in Buffalo or Minnesota. I mean, you're talking about a guy that's going to be great in the red zone, good on third down, possession receiver, another veteran voice for that young receiving core. So I think it's a really good move. You know, there's no way you can't look at that move and say the Commanders didn't get better adding Stephon Diggs. And that's the goal at the end of the day, is every move that you make, you try and make your team better. Washington did. I mean, when they went to the NFC Championship game 2 years ago, right, it was Terry McLaurin, and then it was like Olamide Zaccheaus, it was Noah Brown, it was De'Ami Brown. So Jaden showed the ability to win games, elevate the receivers around him, and, you know, now he doesn't necessarily have to do that as much with Diggs in the on the team and in that offense. So I think it's a good move for Washington.
Are you a fan of the Zay Flowers extension as a Ravens guy?
You know, I am. They definitely overpaid a little bit, but as we kind of all know in sports, it's all about the market. And right now, they made him currently the tied for fourth highest receiver paid in football. But when Jefferson gets his new deal, JSN, Puka, all these guys, you know, he'll start to fall. But, you know, Zay, the thing about him, Nick, is he's not a number one. I think he's a really good number two. But he's consistent. Lamar loves him. He's a great route runner. And if there's one position the Ravens over the years, and they draft just about every position so well, quarterback, running back, corner, defensive, whatever you want, they've drafted just about an all-pro or a Hall of Fame caliber player at every position. Receiver's really been the one that they've struggled. So I think the fact that Andrews is declining, likely moved on to the Giants, and, you know, Zay is kind of that guy that's been consistent for you with Bateman being up and down all these years. It made sense that they had to lock down a weapon for Lamar long term. So, again, I think it's a little bit of an overpay. It's not ideal that you're giving Zay $35 million a year, but I see why they did it.
You know, one of the big things, PJ, that I've really looked at with the AFC is that it's loaded with talented teams, a lot of good young quarterbacks in the AFC. It certainly doesn't feel like it's the Chiefs conference to win anymore like it was over the last few years. How do you kind of see that bottom part of the AFC playoff picture? And again, I know we haven't even started the season, but like I look at the Ravens and go, okay, they didn't make the playoffs last year, but you know, they're still a talented team, but they've got a new head coach. Like the AFC as a whole to me, man, just feels so stacked that we could be looking at teams like the Ravens and the Chiefs and, you know, maybe even the Bengals, depending on health and all that, either on the outside looking in or really fighting for that last playoff spot.
Yeah, I mean, the AFC this year is going to be, it's going to be crazy. I think you can throw out the Raiders, the Browns, the Jets, and the Dolphins. You can throw out pretty much those four teams and say, I mean, look, it's the NFL, anything can happen, but I think just about all of us would be pretty surprised if one of those four teams made the postseason. Some people would probably throw Tennessee in there, but, you know, I'm a fan of Cam Ward. I think he's going to have a really good year. I like the Dable hire as OC, getting Carnell Tate in the top five. And then obviously everybody else, right? The three in the North, Pittsburgh, Baltimore, Cincy, the three in the West, KC, Chargers, Broncos. And then you got, you know, the two in the East with New England, Buffalo, and then all those teams in the AFC South. So yeah, Nick, to your point, man, it does feel as wide open as ever because Kansas City has been the team that is the only team that you can trust to win year after year in the AFC. We saw New England did it last year, but you know, it doesn't feel like the way that they did it was sustainable, and they're going to need Drake May to play a lot better if they're going to want to, you know, get back to the Super Bowl in the next few years. So it's a wide open year. It feels like if the Ravens or Bills are ever going to do it, you know, and get to a Super Bowl and win it, this might be the year. But yeah, man, last year we had some teams make the playoffs we didn't think would at the beginning of the season, like a Pittsburgh, like a Denver, like a Jacksonville. And that's the beauty of the NFL. You really don't know, and we could see something similar this year where you can make a case, like I was saying, for really any of those 11 or 12 teams.
It's inevitable that Aaron Donald is coming back, right?
I think so. Like, why? I mean, why would you come out of retirement to go work out if you don't have any plans of coming back? You know what I mean? So I think he is.
God, that the to me right now, and I know that the Seahawks won the Super Bowl, but it just feels like Rams and everybody else to me in the NFC right now. Look, Seattle lost certainly some pieces on their defense. They lost an offensive coordinator. They lost a Super Bowl MVP running back in Kenneth Walker, and you could argue whether, you know, it should have been the defense or it should have been him or whatever. I just feel like it's the Rams and everybody else right now, Peach. Do you see anybody else, like, after the Rams, and maybe you even disagree with that, what's sort of your top tier of the NFC?
It's a great question. The Rams are definitely in their own tier. You know, if you were ranking, like, the tiers of the NFC, I think they're kind of in their own league. The odds would reflect that. I mean, you just went through the roster. Like, they are loaded everywhere. And their weaknesses last year, you know, was the secondary, and they went out and got Trent McDuffie, and now you add Myles Garrett, which in theory with the pass rush should help out any weaknesses that you might have in the secondary, you know, if they throw away from McDuffie's side. So they're the clear team to beat. I think, you know, after that, I think it's probably got to be Seattle. You know, they are the champs. They've shown the ability to beat the Rams. And that defense is great. And, you know, you got to give Sam Darnold props, Nick. We were all, myself included, we all knew Seattle's defense was good enough to get it done. But we were just like, how are they going to win a Super Bowl with that guy at quarterback? And they did it. They got one of the best receivers in the NFL in JSM. Yeah, they lose Kenneth Walker, but as we all saw, Charbonnet's plenty capable. Jadarian Price, the rookie out of Notre Dame, I think is going to be great. So Seattle would probably be my two. And then, man, after that, like, you could make a case for Philly. You could make a case for Dallas. Maybe you want to go with San Francisco. I know a lot of people like the Bears this year. I'm really not one of them. I think the Lions would probably be the team out of the North if I had to pick one. It's a good question, though. But the Rams are the clear team to beat. And then if you're asking for my two, I think it's probably Seattle.
All right, talking to PJ Glasser, Westwood One Sports, Game Day Garage, Campus Blitz. I know you've got a new episode out with Ryan Horvath today. You guys previewed the Big 12 in college football. I'm going to leave it open-ended for you here. The biggest thing just from the Big 12 alone, without giving away everything on the episode, obviously, that in terms of storylines that stands out for you, because I'll be honest with you, PJ, I feel like the Big 12 has kind of become a little bit of a forgotten conference with so much around the Big 10 and the SEC right now.
No doubt. But, you know, I mean, as we all know, like, somebody out of the Big 12 has got to make it to the college football playoff. They had one team make it last year in Texas Tech. I think they're only going to have one team again this year. And I do think the Red Raiders are the biggest story, Nick, because they were the big favorites before all the Brennan Sorsby stuff, and they're still the big favorites after all the Sorsby stuff. But you just kind of want to see how it all plays out, right? Like, Will Hammond, who's going to be their starting quarterback, did play some games last year, and he's got a great supporting cast around him. They're great at running back and wide receiver and offensive line. Defensively, you know, they lost David Bailey, who went two to the Jets. They lose the defensive player of the year in college football and Jacob Rodriguez, but they just have so much NIL money, and they have been spending it in the right places. You know, like, that's the big thing, Nick. A lot of these high-end programs, they have the NIL money, but Texas Tech really put on a blueprint last year of how you use it wisely and the position groups that you go after and the players that you use that kind of money on. So they clearly know what they're doing. Their schedule is really easy on paper. So I think they're the biggest storyline. What does it look like without Sorsby? Can they do it again? Can they win the Big 12? And even with all that firepower that they lost, can they still look like some semblance of that team from what they were last year?
I have to assume that Texas Tech is going to be the villains of the Big 12, right? Just with everything that happened with Brennan Sorsby?
No doubt. No doubt. They absolutely are. They were already going to be going into the season because they were, you know, how dominant they were last year and they were the favorites. But now with all the Sorsby stuff, they're absolutely the villain. And I love it, right? Like, I am the type of person, Nick, I love when we have villains in sports. You know,
me
I
too.
Love when we have the Chiefs, when we have the Dodgers, and when we have, in this case, Texas Tech and the Big 12. It's just great for, you know, kind of that camaraderie and teams like gunning to try to beat those kinds of teams. And that's what it's going to be this year. You know, BYU is going to be really good. I think Houston's going to be good. Kansas State would be a team that I would keep an eye on. They could be a potential sleeper, but there's no doubt, man. They're all gunning for Texas Tech, and that is the team to beat yet again.
All right, you named some teams that are, to, you know, beyond Texas Tech. Take Texas Tech out of it. If anybody's looking to maybe dabble a little bit, you know, put a little sprinkle on another team winning the conference, who would it be?
I think it would be Kansas State, actually, just because of the price. At like 15-1, 16-1. So Texas Tech's schedule is very favorable. I think you could argue Kansas State's might even be easier on paper. I think they might have the easiest schedule in the Big 12. Their win total is about 8.5. So, I mean, right there, you know, if they go over, they're at 9 wins, and you're flirting with that double-digit win total. And once you get there, you could start thinking about Big 12 championship game. And then if you win that, you're in the college football playoff. What I love about Kansas State, though, this year, Nick, is that they got a new head coach. So no more Chris Klieman, who's been there for nearly a decade. Instead, they bring in Colin Klein, who was a former quarterback for K-State, comes over from Texas A&M, and he did a really good job with Marcel Reed last year, who has a very similar skill set to Avery Johnson, who's the quarterback this year for Kansas State. Both guys are incredible athletes, blazing speed, but it's all about, like, can they be successful throwing the football? And I thought Klein did a great job with Reed last year, and I'm willing to bank that he's going to do a good job developing Avery Johnson, who's a senior this year. So I think Texas Tech wins the league, but if you were looking for somebody outside of them, throw a few bucks on at a good price, K-State would be the team for me.
All right, PJ Glasser, Westwood One Sports, Game Day Garage, Campus Blitz, wherever it is that you get your podcast. You can see it on YouTube as well. Big 12 preview, ACC preview, going through all the conferences. You and Ryan Horvath, it's a great show. I've seen it. It's been doing really well. Tons of guests around all of college football as well. So as everybody gears up for that as well, you guys got more than enough there. Good talking to you, Peach.
Always a pleasure, Nick. Thank you for having me, sir.
And there he goes, a Ravens fan that is, by the way, also very jaded on a regular basis. That's what I love about PJ. He's not a homer with his team. He is a Ravens fan, and he will tell you, usually he thinks they're going to lose, which is hilarious because that's a team that's generally made the playoffs, it's felt like, the entire time that John Harbaugh was there. But it's always interesting, right? Whenever you have an organization that has a new head coach, new coordinators like the Commanders, whatever the case is, it's questions that you just aren't going to get answered until you get into the season, right? We're not going to have the answers until we have the answers. And that's what it certainly is for the Commanders. That's what it is for any other team that's got new coordinators or new head coaches. I'm Nick Ashew. Nick Ashew on the Fan, waiting on Aaron Donald to come back to the Rams. Like, that feels inevitable, right? They've already got a roster that's loaded with talent. And it's like Aaron Donald goes, you know, I haven't played in 3 years, but I might come back just for that. He's pulling the old Roger Clemens, right? Yeah, just show up late. He could probably work himself back and play 10, 12 games this year. If you build it, they will come. That is the Rams, isn't it?
I feel like that was Aaron Rodgers for a few years there, too.
In where? In,
like, is he going to stay in Green Bay? Is he going to sign with the Jets? He's just like, I don't know, but we're going to find out when I don't have to do a whole training camp.
Isn't it amazing how much Aaron Rodgers took from the Brett Favre blueprint?
Yeah.
I mean, it was exactly the same as all this. Like, Brett Favre got criticized for not grooming Aaron Rodgers enough when they drafted him. Aaron Rodgers did the same thing with Jordan Love. The retire, not retire, go here, go here. It's the exact same thing. Like, they're so similar, it's unbelievable.
Yeah, let's hope Aaron Rodgers isn't involved in any charities. Let's just say.
Yes, we'll hope that that's the case. He's still got some left in the tank, though, man. I'll tell you what.
Got some, but I don't. You think you're going to the Super Bowl with Aaron Rodgers?
Well,
on any
no,
team?
But
you
I mean,
on
the,
any team you think? Like,
come
even
on, the Steelers just fired Mike Tomlin, or you know, whatever know. They separated and you know hired.
Aaron Rodgers gets coaches fired now.
Yeah,
he goes places. It ain't his fault, and they'll fire the coach.
Mike McCarthy is a placeholder for more anyway. Like they hired him. He's the guy that's replacing the guy. So it's always hard to be that position.
The Steelers don't play that game a lot, though.
Well, they say
they
that.
Like, what, six head coaches ever or something?
at some point the chain breaks, and eventually you actually have to go like a short amount of time before getting rid of a coach. I don't know. I just the Mike McCarthy thing just felt like a, hey, he's from around here. This will be a good heartfelt hire, and we'll have to figure out who it is at quarterback. Because that's the thing. The Steelers have kicked that can down the road for so many years since Ben Roethlisberger. Hey, well, hell, when he was still there, they were still having trouble. It was terrible. They were just like, we got nothing at quarterback. And we know what it's like, right? And I know what it's like to watch the Commanders slash football team slash Redskins go through just quarterback chase after quarterback chase and it never work out. That's why it's so important to make sure that Jaden Daniels has all the options, all the weapons, and protected and obviously healthy. Because this year three is really important. You don't want to have any question. The best position the Commanders could be in is having to overpay for their quarterback. Because that means that in the end, it's just based on the market. And he had such a good season that we're talking about close to $60 million a year when that contract comes up, and they're happy to write that check.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to be an overpay anyway. I hear you saying, though, it just takes up so much of your budget.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think it's way better to be in that boat than to be in the we have no idea who's going to be quarterback next year boat.
Year and year, year after year after year, they've had that issue. And you just get, you get so tired of it. And the hope is that he stays healthy so you can really see. Because, look, I mean, we know what the floor is for Jaden Daniels when he's healthy. It's his rookie year, and that's damn good. But the hope, obviously, is he improves and gets better and gets smarter as a quarterback and experience and all that. So he continues to improve from that. And if that's the case, I mean, he's going to be a monster. The ceiling is incredibly high with him. And, you know, look, guys get hurt. There are injuries that happen in football, especially quarterbacks that run around and, you know, all of that. But there's a certain point where it becomes it's hard to build a team not knowing what your quarterback's availability is going to be. Occasional injuries, everybody can work through those. If it's every season, five or six games missed or whatever the case is. I mean, hell, look at the Ravens, right? The Ravens are a team that when Lamar Jackson is healthy, they're one of the best in the NFL. And we've watched them late in seasons have issues with Lamar Jackson out, and they can't move the ball. They can't do anything offensively anymore. Sorry, Snoop Huntley was not actually a Pro Bowl quarterback. It was embarrassing that that was even a thing. But, like, that's what they've had to deal with over the years because they move to where Lamar Jackson takes them. And it's really any team, right? Because when you have a quarterback that is a Pro Bowl quarterback, that is an MVP quarterback, you're going to be a team that has high expectations. And when you remove that, the drop-off is usually a lot. Because if your backup is close to your starter that's an MVP, he's probably not going to be a backup for you long. He's going to go somewhere else and be a starter. So you always have that gap that you've got to fill. And, you know, listen, Marcus Mariota, cool. Great backup for a couple of games, but you don't want him out there as many times as they had last year. I know they had a million other issues too, but you just don't want that. And it ends up being a just complete disaster. We'll talk to Scott Abraham in about 30 minutes here. Nick Ashew on the Fan.